the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
And this is episode 228. Who's going to say the name?
The SHA-1 Happy Birthday Tony Collision.
Yes.
All right. And this is Tony Bemis.
Tom Lawrence.
Phil Parada.
And we're a little off our game right now because Mary is not here today.
Yeah. We don't know which order to go in. Like, Mary kicks us off and then looks at us. See, what you guys don't see unless you're watching us on YouTube, it's like she looks at us and that's our cue to do something and quit screwing around. Well, then we can screw around on a podcast, but at least we know to say our names.
Yeah. Anyway, so moving forward, you know, just listening to the intro, I was thinking we need to get it updated.
Because we got to fill.
Yeah, get Phil put in there.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Yeah. Maybe some new music or something.
You know what, though? I like the Leave It to Beaver stuff. I'm sorry. It's so weird that I like it. It's the same reason that when Leo Laporte does his Google, he's got that flute opening, which completely makes no sense at all. Like, I can't connect the flute to Google in any way, and that's why I like it.
All right.
So I don't know. And the other listeners, maybe it's not really not up to Tom. It's really up to the people that actually listen to us. So if you have a suggestion for better music, if not, I'm all pro Leave It to Beaver music.
Yep. And I'm fine with that too. You know, it's what we've had for years and years now.
Yeah. How long has that been like that? Ever since I've been on a podcast. And
yeah, it was probably a year and a half or 2 years before that. So it was.
Oh, wow.
Mid 2013, maybe the beginning of 14, something like that.
It's so a tradition been about, now.
Yeah. Over 3 years.
How many kernels ago was that? So we need a new unit of measurement. We'll measure in kernels.
It was back in the 3-dot range.
Yeah, in the 3-dot kernels.
We're quickly approaching kernel 5.x. As soon as there's about 6 million commits into the source code repository, Linus said that he'll kick off 5.x.
Oh, so he's actually giving a mark this time. Because last time he said, I feel like we need to go to another major number.
He looked through the history of commits and did some counting and said, well, okay, we released 2.x at about 2 million commits. Sorry, 3.x at about 2 million commits, 4.x at about 4 million commits. So it makes sense. We'll do 6 million commits.
Huh. All right.
Anyways. Linus, boy.
Yeah. So Phil, it's been you weren't with us last time, so it's been about a month. Got anything cool going on?
We took a not exactly vacation, but we were in St. Louis, Missouri for a week and a half, working remotely out of various coffee shops. It was really interesting. You quickly find the quote unquote best coffee shops by how comfortable the seating is. So that was tons of fun. Remember, always have a VPN when you work out of anywhere other than your home or your company. So I could do everything that I do at my normal job just halfway across the country.
Yeah. Nice.
I've got a project for a client going on. That's pretty fun. When I can share any sort of public information about that, I will, because it's
super. He shared it with us, and it's super Linuxy. So stupid non-disclosures.
Whoever disclosed anything?
Yeah.
that's it for me. Work, sleep, sit in my terminal, rinse, repeat.
Work, sleep, and code. It's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. What about you, Tony?
On my Nextcloud, when I did the upgrade, it wouldn't let me enable my news reader. So I've had to do it manual. You go to all these different sources and look up things. And well, I finally got that updated. And, the reason it took so long is that and then to move to the new version of Nextcloud also is you had to have, higher than 5.5 or you had to have 5.6 or better of PHP. And, the Ubuntu standard PHP is 5.5. So I had to go through, do that upgrade, and did that this week and got my news feed reader going. And it's like back. I'm back on the game again.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I've been looking at that. I spun up a virtual machine for it, and I never loaded it. Like, I got that far.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, I'm going to load this next week. That was I mentioned it at the last show. That's how long ago that was.
And then the other thing is I think we talked last time that I run my VirtualBox as PHP VirtualBox.
Yeah.
So it's like a web front end for VirtualBox. And I have been leery about moving my main machine over to like FreeNAS or something else, because I previously used it as my desktop with VMs running on it. Well, now I just shoved it in the corner and all it is doing VM stuff. So I'm like, well, I should just turn that into a FreeNAS box. And then, but then I'd have to convert my VMs over to either the plugins or something. Well, I found out this week that you can actually run one of the plugins is PHP VirtualBox.
Yes.
And then you can run VMs inside that.
Yep.
So that's my plan for the next, my next big project will be to tear that down, build a new FreeNAS setup. And when I say tear down, I mean just reinstall the operating system. But I need to move the hard drives over too. So what's really holding me back is I need to get some new hard drives. I'll probably get two or three, ideally four terabyte drives, and then put it all together as a big ZFS.
That's I'm waiting for FreeNAS 10. That's when we're going to do that project.
Oh yeah,
because we're redoing the whole stack at my office. I'm gonna do the same thing.
Nice.
But I'm waiting until FreeNAS 10 is completely out and a little bit tested, and then I'll deploy it.
All right.
That works because when I was first on the show, I was talking about building my own NAS. So still looking for parts. And you guys have always talked about FreeNAS. I've always heard very good things about it. I'll have to check that out.
Do you want a server?
I've got a 4U server taking up space in my basement.
Okay.
I don't turn it on because I could hear it in my bedroom, but...
Oh, we have a quieter one. Hmm. You can have it for free, like, if you just want it. We don't know what to do with some of the equipment that we get. We're like, that's valuable enough not to recycle, but
you're twisting my arm right now.
I know. But we've done that before. We're like people... As my friends sometimes that have projects like this, I'm like, do you want it? It's a decommissioned server. We don't know what to do with it. We're supposed to throw it... there's no... rule is we have to throw it away, but we're like, we don't really just want to get rid of it, but we will. If not, we'd rather give it to someone who still has some life in it, because some of these have, like, you know, we gave away one that had 16 gigs of RAM in it. We didn't know what to do with it. But it was all DDR2 RAM, so it wasn't super fast, but for project-wise.
Yeah, I'll have to take a look at that. I misspoke earlier when I said 6 million commits into the Linux kernel. It's 6 million Git objects. Sorry about that, everybody. Mm. I also posted it to the IRC channel.
Oh, I should connect to the IRC channel.
And speaking of IRC, I posted a happy birthday to Tony with a picture of Richard Stallman looking goofy behind a cake. So happy birthday, Tony.
Thank you. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. It looks like he's depressed because nobody's singing happy birthday to him. Or maybe he's depressed because he doesn't want them to sing happy birthday to him.
I don't know which it is with him.
Right. Anyway, so that's thank you very much.
So me?
Yeah.
What did I do? Well, I thought I was going to die last Saturday, but because of the sinus infection, so I didn't get as much YouTube work as I had done. But things I did get accomplished are finally launching my thomaslawrence.com so I can publish things that aren't directly tech-related, but there may be some side project I'm working on that will also kind of bleed into some of my YouTube channel stuff. So I got that done. I've been on a talking track again of public speaking. And so that got me at Goldman Sachs speaking to their small business class that they held at Wayne State. So I was at Wayne State Friday talking there, which is kind of fun. I like doing panels and talked about social media and marketing and all that fun stuff that we do. We'll have to do that when I'm not doing Linux things. Mm-hmm. Project-wise, other than I've been looking at the FreeNAS 10 and some of that, we've been updating to the latest Unify software. So we've been going out to places, putting the latest version, lots of firmware updates to clients and getting them more managed for Wi-Fi and sorting all that stuff out. New PF Sense updates, rolling those out. So it's in the show notes too, because it's all they have the new version released. It's a whole bunch of bug fixes again. It's not a it's not like they did the facelift last year, which made it so much nicer. But at least it's better. Everything's better.
Hooray!
What else did I did something else I want to talk about? Now I forgot about it completely. But other than that, playing around more with the way Tor works and everything else, kind of just being fascinated by it. And I did several of those videos and got some feedback on them. I'm probably going to do more videos on Tor. Everyone's concerned now about privacy, you know, with the current environment that we're in. So they're like, hey, the government seems to be watching us more. And I think they've been watching for a long time and people are getting more concerned about it. So, you know. It's becoming a more and more popular topic of how to stay anonymous. Like Phil mentioned too, even just when you go to a coffee house somewhere, potentially having your session hijacked or spoofed. I mean, you want to VPN places and encapsulate your data. And yeah.
Does everybody remember when Fire Sheep came out? This is several years ago. That was a fun one. You could get a lot of information with that.
Yeah, Fire Sheep was cool, and the best video done was. And I think they still have the video up. If you type in Men in Gray Hacking, they did a great video. And I'll just comment it real quick. They took a briefcase and cut out a hole for a screen. And they put on gray suits with the old style, like reminds me of like the old FBI things. So they wandered around and they fire sheeped people. But the way they did it was with this briefcase, they walk into a coffee shop and they would set the coffee. They would set the briefcase on the table so someone could see the cutout screen. And they would be mirroring different things that were on their screen and showing it by basically using Fire Sheep to show that they can impersonate them on Facebook or whatever.
That's awesome.
And they would do it and then just leave the coffee shop. Like they would display that they were watching them, but then leave. And someone had filmed it. And it's a really cool video. And it was called The Men in Gray. It was, I guess it's kind of the split. Are they white hat, black cat hackers? Probably the video's still up, but it was really cool.
Actually, I don't remember what Fire Sheep is.
Fire Sheep is the session hijacking where I don't have to know your credentials, but I can use the cookies that are sent in clear text to basically assume them and become you for every site that you're logged into that passes the session cookies. So I then – because earlier days we used to log in by over SSL for some sites, but then it would drop down to standard HTTP. Well, all I have to do is impersonate you. All I have to do is clone whatever session key, and then I could be you on Facebook or any other site that used that type of methodology for persistent login.
I just found their website and posted it to the IRC channel. They've got a pretty nice looking website, and that laptop that is really really slick looking.
Yes,
they call it the MIG briefcase, and then. There's a picture of some human with their IP address saying, ask him out. You only live once, LOL.
Yeah. They have really cool stuff. Like they did some neat conceptual work. And it's very artistic at the same time.
All right.
Yeah. I've spent some time on their website before. It's been a while, but it popped in my head. I've got a lot of hyperlinks in my head. See, this is my problem. This is why I have timelessmarks.com. Because if I would have done this when I did this years ago, this would have been part of my website and part of my thing. Right now, it's just still in my head from whenever this was published.
Are you going to put a Let's Encrypt certificate on your website?
Yeah.
Very cool.
That's on my to-do list. That's not there yet. The problem is the company I use for hosting doesn't support them, and I don't know why, and they're getting a lot of flack for it.
Do you want to move to a host that does?
Yeah, well, that's actually something I'm looking at because we want to actually move 100% of all the WordPress sites we host, which is – I think I host 200 websites or so, so we've got to move them over.
Yeah. And
you know a guy?
I'm in a similar situation where we host through A2, and with shared hosting, you have to open a ticket with them and have them do it. It's not something you can just do through the cPanel.
Right. But there's some companies that have wrote cPanel plugins for it now, which is wonderful. There's also a website that lets you do a signing certificate. They do it for you. The downside is you're pulling everything through their website to get your certificate. But for things like protecting my WordPress site, I'm less worried about it. Because if they man in the middle of it, I mean, it's them. And it just seems unlikely they would try. And I'm not as worried. But for – yeah.
I probably still wouldn't do it though.
It's interesting. Steve Gitson actually did some coverage. I can't remember the name of the company right now, but a few people have been using it for a handful of different things because it allows you to copy and paste in and drop it into a cPanel environment that doesn't support it. So I could use them to do it with Let's Encrypt, but it's a very manual process. And the point of Let's Encrypt is to have a really awesome automated system because we're using it. Phil helped me deploy Let's Encrypt on my Screen Connects session. And, you know, there's a lot of interest in that. Everyone's like, how did you do it? So I documented it to the Screen Connect people. They're fascinated by it. Like the developer contacted me.
Is it because Screen Connect doesn't run over 443? Is that what the hard part is? Or
It doesn't run over 443 for one, and it just was – just the way they designed it, they kind of leave you on your own to get a certificate. They don't have a built-in facility for it.
Screen Connect, I think it's a C#, and it runs in the Mono runtime.
Yep.
What we did was we put a web server such as Apache Nginx, Lite HTTPD. Personally, I'm an Apache guy. And we do our SSL termination at the web server and use mod proxy to say, hey, you're coming into screenconnect.tomlawrence or whatever. And it proxies all the requests over to Screen Connect. And then suddenly all of your Screen Connect traffic is encrypted. You know, I should start a blog.
Well, and this is why that's one of the things that's going into documentation for that, because it exceeds what I want on my blog of my company page. But this is like the type of thing that I told them I'd do a write-up for them on it. And I was going to reach out to you about that. But I pretty much know everything that was done. I mean, I have all the – it works.
Anytime.
But here's what's funny. Screen Connect themselves, if I'm not mistaken, like if you use their own internal one, it fails on SSL Labs for some flaws it has in the way they implement their own SSL. But if you use the Apache proxy, it works flawlessly. So I set out how I did it. If you guys already figured it out, I sent out how I did it, and they're doing it on their installations just by putting putting the Apache in front of it. So, yeah, it's a great way. It's a great solution.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Anyways, that was our catching up.
That was
all
fun.
The fun stuff.
Yeah. All right. So we've got.
We want to hear from you. Call 734-258-7009 or email show@smlr.us with your feedback and questions.
All right. So what did we have for this? Yeah, feedback. I think we had a question about version control, and
Phil answered that one.
I started to. There is a lot that particular gentleman has to worry about. I think that was the Perforce recommendation, but I think version control is the least of that gentleman's problems.
Oh yeah.
I need to go back through.
There's a lot of other conversation. He also posed that same question to one or two of the other LUG in our area, Linux users groups. There's been a lot of conversation around it for the other ones too. And a lot of them followed what you were saying. It's a big topic that it's hard to get through in one or two emails.
Yeah. I get those questions sometimes, sometimes it exceeds the scope at which I can reply. So I have a couple of listeners who actually email me directly now, and sometimes they'll say, how do I install SecurityPivot? Like, that's just the only question I get from them. And I'm like, I need a lot more detail. I'm willing to help, but I need a lot more detail. That's how I reply. I'm like, how do I install it? Where and what and what's the
– Yeah.
Company culture is a huge, tremendous thing. I think most problems – start being solved at the company culture level rather than actual implementation of software and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Setting up practices.
Everybody to buy in for it. Yeah. Into it. Yeah. Otherwise, if people are always complaining about it or not using it, then
what's the point?
It's a useless tool, even though it's a lot better than other ones. But I agree.
There was also a question about a VPN from Mike Lautner. He wants to know some good, reliable, friendly services. Just use a VPN in a country that has good privacy laws. So anything other than the United States.
Yeah.
Right.
if you're using a VPN in here, use it on a box that you control. Keep doing research. Stay up to date on software and security news.
Well, and we've talked about there's a couple different things. You can use Tor if you're really trying to hide yourself completely. If you don't want even them to know you're using Tor, you can set up a Tor relay so you can Tor proxy before you get out so they can't see your ISP can't see you're doing it. And if you're asking about VPN companies, I don't use one myself. And I have a weird tinfoil hat reason of if I were a government and I wanted to know what people were doing, I would set up a really cheap VPN company. Because they would all come to me. Matter of fact, I'd make it like, I don't know, $1 a month. So,
yeah.
But PIA is a real popular one. They seem to be, from my understanding from listening to our podcast, fairly well vetted. People like know the people involved in the project. Mm-hmm. And they support like paying with iTunes gift cards or any random way to pay,
right.
Which is kind of – they have a lot of anonymous pay options, which is kind of cool. So you disambiguate yourself financially from them, which is – they seem – and the fact that they're using the money that they're making to support a code audit of OpenVPN, that makes me happy with them as a company. Like they're like, yeah, we want to do a code audit on us. I'm like, yes. So I can't speak for them directly, but they do seem to be a pretty good company based on what I've heard.
Yeah. I mean, I've used them, and what I like about them is that they have a lot of different end nodes that you can tell them. You could specify where you want to come out at.
And I've used them for PFSense setups for people. I've built networks so people can have at the gateway level have their PFSense box jump through PIA. It's a supported feature. So you can reroute all of your traffic through it.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Do follow the instructions. When it says put the password in a text file, don't assume you can put the password in the spot that says password. That seems completely logical, but for a reason it didn't work until we created a text file with the password in it. I don't know why. Really? I know I spent an hour on that. It should work.
Right.
We got a note from Mary a couple days ago about Connie C., the founder of Scientific Linux and Fermi Linux. She's retiring from Fermilab after 23 years.
Oh.
Oh, wow. But she's also confirmed that she's going to be talking at PenguinCon this year.
That's really, really cool.
Yeah. So she's been coming. She's been a participant, I guess you would say, or audience member. She's been coming to PenguinCon for a long time. So I guess Mary finally got a hold of her, or somebody got a hold of her and convinced her to talk.
Sweet.
So, yeah.
And I'm excited for PenguinCon talks. Today, that's my other to-do list, is finish typing up. I have so many different things I'm trying to figure out. I'm narrowing it down, because if not, I'll commit to doing everything. So I'm right. Figuring out which ones I'm going to submit to Kevin. So if Kevin, you're listening, I should have that to you today.
Right.
Because it's – how many days do I have left? It's like today the last day? No, 2 days.
2 days, yeah.
I have 2 days to submit.
Oh, right. This is February. We have a weird number of days in this month.
Yes.
28, yeah. I had submitted for our show, plus I'm doing a firewall talk, like 101 firewalls. What are they and how to write your first few rules.
Oh, cool.
Kind of understand what it's doing kind of thing.
I've had two people mess me, want to know, because this will be the third year I've done a PFSense talk. So yeah. I think I'm definitely going to submit that one.
Yeah, I like yours because on yours, you'll go through a lot of their features and how you can set it up.
Step by step.
What I want to do is do kind of a
big picture,
a vendor agnostic. You can this is basically how all firewalls work, and then I will bring up my PFSense and show them this is what if you're adding rules, these are the kind of information you need and things like that.
Oh, and that's important because part of my replies, if you read through my YouTube messages on PFSense, are explaining what firewalls do.
Yeah,
they start with the PFSense thing. Will this keep the hackers out of this or that? No. You don't understand what this does.
So, right.
Which is fine. I mean, it just means I need to make a 101 video myself just so I can reply with a video instead of keep typing it all.
Yeah.
But no, that's great.
Yeah. And then we also got but along those lines, I had put in for our talks. And then I didn't hear anything back for like 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then Kevin got a hold of us and said, hey, I haven't heard anything from you guys. Well, apparently they had a glitch in their system and it wasn't forwarding him the presentations. So if you haven't heard from him, then
Techies never glitch.
Go ahead and email him. Say, hey, I submitted this. Can you go check it out or make sure you got it? And then he's usually pretty prompt about that.
Okay, cool.
I put in a talk that I hope gets accepted for a tool called Terraform and infrastructure as code automation. And if I'm not lazy, I might put in a second one for test-driven infrastructure. That's pretty fun.
It is, though.
All right.
I'm doing retro gaming, so I got that one pretty
no
much.
Other, nice. No other talk matters.
All right. We had one more email, and I can't remember. I looked back through it. I don't think this came up in our last the last show. But we had a new listener email us, and they're saying that thanks for a good show. So we said thanks. But he wanted to know what our YouTube links and stuff were. So, Tom, I think you replied.
Yes. I think I threw my YouTube link on there. I'm a pretty easy guy to find. Unfortunately, Sir Thomas Lawrence has better SEO, even though he's been dead for like 200 years. But if you go to my website, lawrencesystems.com, you'll find links to everything. And if you can remember how to spell my name, it's Thomas Lawrence, LAWRENCE, thomaslawrence.com. I'm putting more links there for things. So, but then either one of those will lead you to my YouTube channel.
Yep. And then, you don't really want to link directly to your YouTube channel?
Well, I'm fine with that too. It's just,
The technology?
The technology, yeah.
Nice.
Because I can change it, but I haven't found anything short because, like, literally someone has all the other ones. So we're trying to figure out what to do. And we had original hashtag of the technology, and I don't know, it never really panned out for me. Hashtagging YouTube doesn't work as good. Like, it used to work, and now it kind of fell off, so I don't do it no more.
Oh, yeah. All right.
One last thing from PenguinCon. A friend and former coworker of mine, his name is Steve. He created a small little application for PenguinCon. It's called PocketPenguin.party, and you can use it on your phone, on the web. It's a neat little scheduling app. He's been going to PenguinCon for years now, and he said, you know, this one might be the most usable, not because he wrote it, but.
Yep.
Is it so you can keep track of where all the talks are? Or?
Yeah.
RSVPs, scheduling, and I'm posting it in IRC as well. Again, that's pocketpenguin.party.
You know what they've done in the last few years is they would take the they created a Google calendar of all the talks, and then you can take just one or two of the tracks and import it right into your Google calendar. So whenever the next talk is coming up, you can tell it to pop up and give you an alert of, you know, where to go. And all you have to do is look through your calendar.
But we need an open source solution, Tony. You're right, though.
Who is it that wrote it? Do you know?
Or? His name is Steve Marsh.
Oh, cool.
All right. Well, I guess we're going on to
Distro Fever, where we cover the latest hot distro releases and news.
All right. So what did you guys see on there? Is there anything interesting?
We have some more flavor releases in the 17 version of the Ubuntu's. I see we got a Kubuntu. It's looking pretty. PFSense, of course. Can't not right, be excited.
PFSense
about
update.
That. PFSense update. So far the updates have gone smoothly.
Numerous bug fixes, stability and bug fixes.
A bunch of free BSD errata. There's a lot of little things that I just didn't notice. And I guess because I don't do this, I guess like if you create a two aggregated networks and you try to rename them, it breaks. I didn't know that because once I create them, I don't rename them. So but it should be able to rename them, but you can't. You can now. You couldn't before this update. So there's like little things like that in there. I guess some typos, and there are all kinds of real minor things, nothing earth-shattering or groundbreaking. But it's, of course, built on a newer version of BSD, so there's that.
One that I've used in the past for a project, it's called Rancher OS. It's for running Linux containers. Specifically, people use it for a piece of technology called Docker. Rancher OS is really interesting in the fact that you can roll back to prior known working states, and it handles starting and stopping all of your containers. And then if you are a developer or someone who doesn't want to click around in the command or type in the command line for everything, Rancher OS has a really nice interface where you can drag connections between all of your containers to create your software-defined network and say, this container, this web application can talk to only this database or this caching layer. I had used it about 2 years ago now. So it's cool to see it coming along. And Rancher OS has support inside of Terraform for other people who know what the hell I'm talking about.
Very cool.
That is cool.
I like the software-defined networking. I think it's a huge thing. I've listened to a couple podcasts just on that topic, and it's really fascinating. I think that we're going to see a lot more of that. I mean, now everything's like in the cloud. Now we can redefine our infrastructure kind of on the fly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's really nice.
And, of course, restrict it. So, yeah. Because we're looking at segmenting out our network even further at my office for all kinds of reasons of the crazy computers that come into our store.
Yeah. All right. And then I see Linux from Scratch 8.0 is out. Not that it's an actual distribution. It's more of a book, right?
Yeah. It's how to build it from raw. Oh, and Gparted. You know, that's a popular tool. We use it a lot to delete Windows partitions because, as it turns out, sometimes Windows locks up looking at Windows partitions. So we actually have to boot off of something else, delete the partitions, and then we can load Windows. Because corrupted Windows partitions, Windows goes, hold on, let me check what's here. Oh, I'm never going to stop checking forever and ever. And you're not going to be able to load this computer until you just delete it.
Jeez. Wow.
So Gparted is a wonderful tool because it's finally time. We have seen SSD failures, and they fail weird.
Oh, really?
They don't. Now, the hard fail, it's easy to identify. It don't work no more. But the weird failures are the creeping data corruption that seems to occur. We had a computer that we couldn't define the problem, but we know when we replaced the SSD, all those problems went away. And really? We reloaded it three times. And no matter what, you would just creep into these weird lockup issues. And finally, it would just drop the partition. It wouldn't boot no more, and the partition would be garbled.
Hmm.
So we reloaded it again. And then it did it after another week. Another week went by, and then finally we replaced SSD, and the problem went away.
Wow.
We even did a firmware update, everything. And the SSD told us it had usage, like in the smart, but it was not in any type of fail state.
Hmm.
It was a three-year-old SSD, I think. So.
Yeah.
How reliable is smart? Because I've read tons of different opinions on it.
Yeah. Very unpredictable.
Yeah. What the biggest problem is that there's – or the vendors don't really hold to the standard.
They do not.
That's very unfortunate.
Yeah.
Why have a standard then?
Exactly.
it gets to be more fun. Try using Smart and P in a FreeNAS box with a random array of drives, and you realize that your script that you thought was looking for smart status stuff has some things in the wrong areas. Matter of fact, where it's defined under the smart tool in Linux is not always where the number of hours the drive has, because some of the drives, we had a drive we plugged in and we tested it, like, you know, 6 months later, we're looking at it because it had an error on it. We're like, wow, it's been spun up for 4 years, but we've only had it for 6 months. Then we realized that the number's wrong. And I started researching this and going, wow, there's no standard for this stuff.
Yeah.
It only kind of sounds like a standard.
And then it's self-reporting too.
It is self-reporting.
If it doesn't know it has a problem, then it's not going to report it.
Yep. Raid everything. Back up everything twice.
Yeah.
Don't trust smart. Yeah, I think it's all we have for the distributions. I'm excited for the new Ubuntu coming out, though. Oh, we also – the LTS is at the 0.2 version now for Ubuntu, 16.04.02.
I feel since Mary's not here, we kind of mentioned TrueOS has the release 2017 – 202-22, and that is the new free, or it's based on FreeBSD.
Yeah,
and she had mentioned it before. It's just now the full release is out.
Yeah, didn't you do a distro? We did a distro review of that, didn't we?
Perhaps.
I think so.
All right.
Tech news and views.
So Tom, I think you can go first again.
Okay.
Since you have a gigantic list.
I do have a giant list. I'm going to do it a little bit out of order. So I'll actually start with the last one, which is Uber got themselves in way more trouble That's a play on words because Uber, who is also receiving money from Google, who has a little company called Waymo, W-A-Y-M-O, who makes self-driving cars, apparently they let them look at technology and then they just took the technology as what's being alleged by Google and are now suing Uber. Uber is just an awful company on so many levels. And well, this doesn't even surprise me based on anything else we've heard about Uber. So they're denying it, but they've denied all the wrongdoings that they've admitted that later that they were completely doing. And on a good note, Microsoft has released an AI for training on autonomous cars and drones, completely open source. Oh. They're luring us in, convincing us they're open source.
What happens when that autonomous car blue screens?
Right.
Well, that's why we are open sourcing it. We're not building it on a Windows box. Right. We can develop it in some other platform that's not running Windows 10 when it just randomly. Yeah. I think we're going to see so much on the drone side. We've seen that at the – I'm not a sportball fan, but the Super Bowl had all those drones. I just like the – that was like my most – like there was drones at the Super Bowl, so I watched that part. And then they flew in concert with each other. But that's something I think we're going to see a lot of because, you know, we've seen UPS deploying drones, if you watch that video, where they could drop off packages. But swarm technology, as they call it, that's where it's at when they can take a whole lot of these drones and have them coordinate together to go make something happen.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted to mention. The Expanse sci-fi show. Excellent. Highly recommend watching it. And they used drone swarm technology in it, and it was really cool because it's a future show in space. And they showed how they could move rockets around, and they just swarmed out all the little rockets that would attach. And watch that show, man. It's in the second season. Absolutely amazing. The production quality is so top-notch.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Wipe and reinstall a running Linux system via SSH without rebooting. Whoa. Phil has something to say about that.
That's interesting.
A friend of mine on IRC, he found the script and he sent it to me, I think it was Friday, maybe Saturday. He said that it helped him fix in LVM resizing the root partition without having to reboot.
Hmm.
And I said, oh, pretty cool.
Yeah, basically you can log in SSH, push everything into memory, and then work on the system. And as long as you don't make a typo or mistake, you can not actually go to the main terminal and remount the system and turn it all back on.
Wow. That is interesting. I think I heard somebody else talking about this. And yeah, it's you can completely unmount your root system. Work on it. Yeah, that's cool.
Really cool. I think my favorite comment on Reddit was someone who says, I did this to my friend's computer, and when he rebooted, he had Hannah Montana Linux. And I
thought that that's amazing.
Yeah.
That is.
The fact that Hannah Montana Linux still exists and there's still a page for it, or that he did that. Or that it booted. I'm not sure.
All of them in concert with each other.
Yeah.
You're right.
tech humor is my favorite.
You mentioned without making a typo, that reminded me of something called Suicide Linux.
Yes.
And as soon as you make one small typo, one wrong keystroke, it just RMRFs your system.
I haven't thought about that in a while. I remember that distro. That was fun.
You know, but this I could have used this script or this what is it called? Takeover.sh. I could have used that a couple of years ago where I had a problem where I had a really big home drive, and I really wasn't using that much data on it. But my root was getting filled up, not by like file size, but inodes were being all used up. And then all of a sudden I couldn't do anything on it. And all I had to do was move one of my slash var or slash something off. Was it var? Yeah, I think I just moved var off and then it fixed it, you know, but I had to go through and create all the and move it, reboot a few times, and then hopefully everything worked because it was a full remote system that I had out there, and this would have been nice to be able just to do it all and unmount, remount without having to take it down.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
System 76 has new sexy laptops with GTX 10 series and 4K displays. That's exciting.
System 76 are so beautiful.
They are. They're probably – I really like my Lenovo, and I almost – as I wanted something really small. But I tell you what, for sure, as far as workhorse laptops go, those System 76 ones and the reviews on them are all just – everyone loves them. Like the company itself, the culture of the company. Like you like them. You like the computers and products they build. And, of course, they all ship with Linux is why we're bringing them up here. So that's definitely pretty awesome.
They call it the Kaby Lake?
The Kaby Lake processor Kaby by Lake? Intel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And see, this is what I think is driving even more over to Linux, because there's a lack of – Microsoft's just not going to be supporting a lot of this on their older operating systems like Windows 7. Because of the way Microsoft writes their kernels, it has to implicitly list each processor it runs on. If they don't implicitly list, it doesn't boot. So when there's a new processor out by Intel, they have to do a microkernel update to allow that processor, which means the original spin of – ISO of Windows 7 won't boot on a Kaby Lake. You have to have an updated one to do it. So it's creating challenges, and Windows 10 has its own challenges, as we all know. And so I think more people will keep moving to Linux. And System 76 is definitely they're bleeding edge when it comes to a lot of making really nice workstations. Dell's getting that market too. Dell had the numbers. We covered it two shows ago. I mean, it was huge how many shipped in 2016 of Linux laptops that they shipped. So
wow,
the market's heating up for this, which is awesome.
Year of the Linux desktop. It's happening.
It's happening. We're the 2%ers. Krita, if you haven't heard of it, krita.org, an amazing open source and design program. Phil's wife is a designer and has used it herself and was quite impressed with it. So, and she's not a Linux direct user. She's more of an Adobe person. So even she was impressed with it, but it's they've added audio support for animations. And so it's kind of for drawing and illustrating. So it's kind of a competitor, open source competitor, but I tell you, I've seen some of the work people have done with it. It's absolutely breathtaking. And it's not just open source, it's cross-platform. You can get it on Windows and Mac and Linux. I only run it on Linux.
Is that something that you can like hand draw in?
Yeah.
Or is that mainly what it is? Or
You can think of it like
a CAD program.
Or... Adobe Illustrator, but free open source. With this audio support, maybe they're trying to do something that After Effects can do.
Well,
or maybe it's a start.
Well, what they do is because it does cell animation. So if I draw a cartoon out, I can place the audio in and set the mouth movements to it. And before you're doing it externally, they've incorporated it to make cell animation easier internally. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a video editing program, but it's allowing it there. And they have a demo. If you follow the link in the show notes, there's actually a demo they did of how they were using it to play audio and move the mouth of the cartoon character that they had drawn to that and then create the final animations.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, definitely. That's a whole – I want to see more cartoons now.
Developers who have an art background, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it really is. It's a unique project because, generally speaking, we think of hardcore developers not being as leaning in the artistic side as much. They're more, you know, functional. That's why my point of sale looks like it does, because I functionally made it, and it's horribly square. No rounded edges on anything. Anyways. This is fun. A script that reminds you to get a drink of water and bash. So for what? People like Phil and or even myself, I mean, when I get heavily working on something from the command line, you may not remember to take care of your body, like drink of water. And so you can set a timer inside of it and it will remind you to you should get up and drink water. Or you can put whatever you want in there. But it's a script that will drop out of the command line. And it reminds you should do something, like probably just get up and walk is good, too. Like, you've now spent 8 hours in this front of this terminal. Move.
Pretty tiny script. It's 28 lines. Easy to expand. The creator of the script has a little image on their GitHub page that shows off functionality. But they have their media directory, which has a bunch of downloaded movies. So I hope those were legally acquired.
Yep. Side note for the Phil will file an issue on GitHub with that. Just to let you know.
Wow, yeah.
Ubuntu powered robots and augmented reality helmets to be showcased at the Media World Conference 2017. So I thought that was pretty cool. Augmented reality, I really see is where it's at. I'm sorry, Mobile World Conference. I said Media World Conference. World Congress. Anyways, augmented reality to me is really where we're going to go because there's no way to solve the you can research just the, as I call it, the lizard brain problem of why you get sick in VR, and which has been plenty of research in, and it's because our brains are wired to, for a certain percentage of the population, to get ill in VR. But augmented reality has way more advantages because if you could just put a pair of glasses on me that reminded me of people's names and put names next to them as I looked at them, I would be so happy and I would seem so smart. For now, I can't remember anybody's name. But think about that from cool. I've seen so many great there's a couple short films people made of what the world might look like. And, if you've ever watched Black Mirror, I think they had a couple episodes like that too where you can walk around with like an augmented reality system that would enhance it. And I think that's like our – like. Evolution will never make me remember names, but this will. Let's just bypass the evolution thing and just put smart glasses on me with augmented reality and massive processors. So it's really cool. And I love the fact being open source because as we know with the open source community, we get hands on this stuff and we make it cooler. So, and it's Ubuntu powered. And Microsoft's trying to get into that with the HoloLens. I don't think any of their stuff is open source though. There is a test driving Hashcat using Google's cloud server GPUs. It'll be a link in the show notes. A guy does a breakdown step by step of how he did it. And he puts it in an interesting perspective of Hashcat will reverse MD5 hashes and it takes a certain amount of GPU power to reverse it. So you're basically saying the length of your password costs this much to crack. So your password is just a matter of determination. Like I can lease cloud server time with GPUs for massive cracking. It's going to cost me, let's say, $1,000 to crack a password this long right now. Yeah. One, that number goes down every time, all the time. And it's just an interesting perspective on it going, all I got to do to crack your password is have the desire and the money. So if you're a high value target, there's the reason to spend $1,000 on GPU time from Google to get your password cracked.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's always some website being breached, and then there that password files being sold on the black market.
Yep,
and so you grab that
to the rainbow tables, and
yeah,
there's a fantastic website called HaveIBeenPwned.com. Yes. I sign up for that, and on the very very unfortunate occasion that I've been pwned, well, I get to know about it.
Yeah,
as long as that website gets alerted that hey, there's been a data leakage somewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty much data leaking everywhere right now. So
it says there's 359 million MySpace accounts that have been breached.
Oops.
That's number one of the top 10.
I can't even sign into my old MySpace account.
Well, it's because they breached it and they stole your password.
Do they even list Yahoo anymore? There's like a cloud going up out of their data center every now and then. It's just another data breach, like a nuclear mushroom cloud. What's that? Oh, Yahoo had another billion users breached again.
Do you think getting Yahooed is going to become a standard of measurement for?
Yeah. Is it Yahoo bad? Right. Did you guys get Yahooed?
Actually, surprisingly, they don't have it on here. I wonder if this just needs to be updated.
Probably. It's one of those things where they just do their hands up in the air. Everybody's pwned. Just we don't even have a better answer. Everyone got pwned.
You get pwned. You get pwned. You get pwned.
We can't even keep up with it. The pwned database is larger than we can load into any. They haven't made a database big enough to hold the pwnage. So that could be a problem. Yeah, I mean, Yahoo lost a billion. How do they load that? They're like, well, you lost. We're just going to say if you had a Yahoo address, you were pwned. That's it. If it ends in Yahoo, you don't even need to have a database lookup. Just if it ends in at yahoo.com, you were pwned.
Right.
Just a rule. Put it in there. The $5 showdown. I thought this was really cool. This guy did a Linode versus DigitalOcean versus Amazon LightSail versus Vulture, I think is the other one. Link will be in the show notes. But it's a breakdown, memory comparison, speed comparison, what you get, how fast is it. And so if you want a $5 Linux server through one of these virtual hostings, they have a comparison of actually what it means. And he's, you know, third party just did it. I thought it was really cool. Definitely interesting because I've never looked at it from that perspective. But pretty neat.
Does he just give an overview or does he?
Oh, you know, he does all the memory tests and details. Yeah. He gives you all the juicy details of exactly how it works. So it's not like just a comparison chart. It's a here's me doing a speed test on the memory, a speed test on a hard drive, the data transfer rates. So there's a lot of detail of functionally what it's like to use those, which I thought was really cool.
Hmm.
And $5 for a Linode with, you know, 20 gigs of SSD is not bad.
Yeah.
Get you playing on something.
And if you spend that $5 on that VPS and then you get backups from Linode, that's $10 a month. And then mm-hmm. you don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah.
I've used Linode for several years now. Their customer support has always been quick and responsive from my perspective. But it's always worth testing out the other ones too. This guy's website, really, really slick looking. I really like it.
Yes. And that's one of my ThomasLawrence.com problems is I've been wanting to look at cleaner templates like this. And I thought about messaging this because I think this is done in WordPress. So I was going to message him because he didn't list what template he's using in there or if he developed himself or if I could have a copy of it. He's got a lot of cool stuff on his website too. His name is Josh Sherman. Coding life stuff, fermentation too, and shipping fixes everything. Like, it's his title. But he's got a lot of interesting writing on here. He's a born-again Linux user. He beat PHP. You can beat it too. And he once beat Super Mario Brothers without using a warp zone. That's also on his page. He's got a lot of little fun stuff on there.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
At the bottom it says it's powered by Discuss.
That's the plugin for the comments. Facebook comments.
For the commenting, right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, do you often see people using Discuss instead of the built-in WordPress?
Yeah, because it works a lot. I have it on my website so people can comment via their Facebook on my blog posts, and really? I get good interaction with it.
Do you have – I don't think you have to worry about spam bots and stuff.
It solves that
point. Oh, really?
Because you're basically outsourcing it to them for Facebook comments.
Oh, okay.
It works.
Hmm. Does Discuss own your data then? Or are they?
They're still Facebook comments, so they're not embedded on your site at all. They're just tagged to your site post. I'm trying to remember how that works. It's weird. So no, you don't own, but they're comments anyways. So
yeah, you got to deal with all of what Facebook does.
The spam right. is just yeah. You it's whatever Facebook's rules are because it's they linking their Facebook account. I think the comments tie to their Facebook account, and then it's somehow posts that they posted. I don't know. It's weird. I haven't dug into it. I just turned it on. I don't even know. It's been so long. I don't even know if it's working on us anymore. We don't get that many comments on the blog posts. They're random. But we're not controversial, so that's why. Basically, if you're a news site and you post political things, it's a 10 million crap show of stuff. So I think that's why companies like Discusser exist, because it's the only way to handle all the comments that fly in off of news sites.
Hmm.
Handling yourself is not possible. Plus, telling everyone to create an account on every individual news site means they won't.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And they won't bother. The only people that actually bother with the registration notifications are lots of spam bots.
Yeah.
All right. I'll leave it to you guys from here because I think we want to talk about some cloud happening. What is that? The SHA. We have a SHA-1 problem and we have a cloud thing. I'll let you guys take it away on those.
We had some The world had some very interesting discovery by Google. Google said Google figured out the first ever recorded SHA-1 collision. SHA-1 is a secure hashing algorithm. It's used in it was used everywhere. Primarily, it's in Git. Whenever you make a Git commit. There's a SHA-1 hash associated with that. Subversion uses it. And actually, the WebKit team broke their Subversion repository for a little while by uploading the PDFs that Google created that have the matching.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was an interesting thread to read.
Yeah, I seen that. They broke it by uploading the PDFs, and someone had to do an explainer on that one. That you can't have file. Well, we thought files wouldn't have it, but SHA-1. How old is SHA-1? Is it about 20 years? It's been around a long time.
I know that they've been trying to deprecate it for the longest time.
Right.
I don't believe you can get
You can't.
SSL certificates issued in SHA-1 anymore. I don't believe that the major browsers will support it.
Right. Well, not only do they not support it, but they're not supposed to be giving out certificates in SHA-1 anymore.
And that's what got Symantec in trouble.
It's not because this has happened in the past. This is the first one he's saying. It's just they've said theoretically, you know, processing has gotten to the point where you should be able to find these, you know, birthday attacks or collisions.
I found a post from DJB, Daniel Bernstein, on the SHA-3 mailing list dating back to 2012. Back then, he said the details of the original MD5 collision attack turned out to be a terrifying incident on the structure of MD5. The details for a SHA-1 attack are similarly scary. Now, this was 5 years ago at this point, but people have been talking about this for far longer than that.
Right. They said that theoretically it's been possible since 2005. Hmm. It's just processing hadn't gotten to the point to do it until now, right? Or
probably something like that.
Yeah. To be able to break it.
For Google to break it, it took something like 110 GPUs cranking away at 1 year to create this collision. Hmm. Now, if they actually tried to brute force it, the infographic says 12 million GPUs cranking away at 1 year.
Holy cow.
But this ties in nicely to something that Tom was talking about, where your password, well, I can crack that for $1,000 with these GPUs. What is your SHA-1 hash worth? Well, 110 GPUs at a year.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You added in one of the links is to over to PIA's website, and they're saying that they've found that the same thing, that they found that the practical attack on SHA-1, but it's different from what PIA uses. Where PIA uses
HMAC, isn't it?
Yeah, they use HMAC SHA-1.
Yeah,
and so that is still different. So if you're using private internet access or PIA, then you're still safe.
Yeah, there's the HMAC SHAs is slightly different. Isn't HMAC one of the electric curve ones? I have to look it up. I forget. It's a key hash message authentication is the HMAC.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can find, they have a Wikipedia page. You can find all the really deep math that exceeds Tom's knowledge.
Right.
For the average person, this really isn't a problem, but we're going to get better cryptography in our software moving forward. So that's exciting.
Yes.
Because this was only theoretical up until Thursday, yeah. Friday.
Mm-hmm. It went from theoretical to holy crap.
Yeah. So right after that, Cloudflare said, hold my beer, watch this.
Watch this. I can right. I can make that news disappear. Yeah. So Cloudflare had a typo through their interpreter it's an Nginx interpreter. Is that what?
It's a piece of code written in a language called Regl. And it's compiled into an Nginx module. And then they ship traffic through Nginx, and then Regl does some crazy interpretation on all of it.
Yes. And what happened was, as I understand this, when they did it, they wanted to prevent a buffer overflow. You have a greater than, say, hey, this cannot be greater than this, or dump it. So that's how you stop your buffer overflow in what they were trying to do. They did it in the C language, but when it went through Regl, it changed it from a greater than to an equal sign. So, and because when they did the code audit, as it came through Regl, my understanding is someone just overlooked it because they're looking at more functional things like overall, but not looking at certain details. So, and of course, because the code still worked, you assume that the interpreter is working properly because the code still functions, but it actually stripped this out. So it kind of And they did a great full disclosure. Cloudflare did everything right that you could possibly have done. And they're very open and are on the talking circuit now of doing interviews and podcasts where they've talked about this to really make sure people understand this, because this is a fundamental problem of if you use any type of code interpreter, and just because it functions as you run the output going, hey, my code runs to interpreter and it works, so it must be fine. But it turns out it was stripping out this particular thing and swapping those. So they got to now audit everything. And I don't think there's anything else that they had a problem with. But now anytime you're running this, it's another thought process of going, let's make sure that this doesn't happen again.
This isn't particularly just a Linux issue. This affects everybody who uses the general internet. Because Cloudflare is behind lots of websites, even if you may not know it. Just because you're using something like 1Password or Reddit, well, Reddit could be using Cloudflare on the back end.
Yep.
So in my show note, I've got this Cloudbleed, or how I learned to not worry so much and use a password manager.
Yeah.
What was happening, or what happened with Cloudbleed, is a Google InfoSec researcher named Tavis Ormandy.
He's amazing. The guy's a savant. Read his work.
was checking out an edge node in all of the infrastructure that he gets to deal with, and said, hey, you know, I'm getting some really weird information back. Doing some research, he reached out to Cloudflare Security, and they found that they could get uninitialized chunks of memory from Cloudflare. Now, that's a bad thing, but it's really bad when you start seeing passwords or private traffic that should have been encrypted, but you're now seeing raw text.
Right, because what Cloudflare does is it's a CDN where it accelerates your viewing or the website that you're going to. So if it's an HTTPS website, it has to break that. It acts as a man in the middle, right? It breaks the your encryption, and then recreates it again with them in the middle to be able to speed that up.
Now the good news is, even though it was leaking some of the text out of there as it overflowed and fell into plain text, it was not leaking the key itself. Because it's done as a part of a separate operation to break the encryption. So at first it would decrypt it, then it would overflow, then it would leak in text wherever the overflows had occurred, but it didn't break the key. So the key was not part of that, which is good, because it could have been everyone lost their private keys. And if somewhere like Google lost their private keys, well, there would be more news.
Yeah, that'd be very bad.
These uninitialized chunks of memory were cached inside of search engines.
Really?
So that's why we should all be changing our passwords.
Yep.
I hope that everyone's using a password manager. If not, I've got several that I could talk about for a moment.
Yep.
Personally, my family uses 1Password. It's good and cheap. It's really easy to manage. If I forget my password, my wife can reset it for me. And then I get an email and she has to confirm that I actually did reset my password, so that's really nice. It works on Android, iPhone, Windows, Mac. For Linux, I just use the browser itself.
Yeah.
It signs you out after 10 minutes. There's also PassPack, which is free for one user. They store information. It's another cloud service. Pretty nice. And then if you don't trust any of that, you can use KeyPassX. It's free. But make sure you do your own backup of it, because if you lose that database, well, there goes your passwords.
Yep. And I'm a LastPass fan, and I've got a review of it that I put together. And LastPass has been well vetted and white papered and gone through peer audit of their code. So they've got a really secure way of doing it. They were one of the first in the game doing this stuff too. Some people said, oh, they've had security breaches. I'm like, well, you've been doing it as long as they have, you're the first in the game. Other people are kind of copying their business model, but yeah, I mean, there's going to be some issues, but overall, they haven't lost people's passwords, so they're good. They're another good choice. So
yeah, I use LastPass too, and I mean, the biggest reason I went to use it is because the syncing between my desktop and my phone, you know, mobile devices, and I pay for it, so I can be able to share it, and I've got to get my wife on it.
Yeah, My wife uses it. We use it at my office. That's how we share passwords between all the employees and clients and things like that.
But so. Talking about KeePass or Q,
there's PassPack KeePassX.
Yeah, there's actually a way to integrate that into Nextcloud, so you can sync that across computers, or back it up, and then it has a plugin. It's called KeyWeb that you can go in and manage it there too. I haven't set it up yet because I'm using LastPass, but it looks very cool.
Yeah. I had trouble with the web interface where I tried it and it was buggy.
Oh, yeah.
But I may look at it again at some point. I wouldn't mind having something that was entirely self-hosted, but for now I use LastPass because it works and it makes it easy for me and my guys to share passwords.
Right.
I posted the KeyWeb link inside of the IRC channel.
Oh, cool.
Cool.
All right. Sir, what else do we have for the news?
I've got some very basic web security tips. Use a tool such as uBlock Origin.
Oh, yes.
It works in Firefox, Chrome. Aren't you using some sort of browser like that? Use a plugin called HTTPS Everywhere. And then for Firefox, I use something called S-Sleuth for SSL youth. It tells you a score of the certificate on the website that you're on. It tells you the ciphers being used, the TLS version, who issued the certificate. Tons of very nice information.
That is definitely good.
You know what I use? I use Privacy Badger.
Okay.
And that's also a plugin for all the major browsers, and it's backed by the EFF, or did they? I can't remember if they developed it or they are supporting it.
I know that they help develop HTTPS Everywhere.
Yeah. What I like about Privacy Badger, it's similar to uBlock Origin, similar to the point where it doesn't block everything. It blocks things, but they have like a whitelist saying that these things are good, these things are bad, and so some ads will still come through. So as long as it's not like known malicious ads, then I'll still see them. And I'm okay with that because I want to be able to support people or support websites that are, monetizing through ads. But if it's being malicious or egregious or whatever, I don't want to support that. So that's why I like the Privacy Badger.
Yeah. Websites are way too many pop-ups, not things.
Yeah. I had a few things. Did you get all through all what you were talking about, Phil?
I'm good and done.
All right. So my first article is iPhone robbers are trying to fish iPhone victims. Or what Krebs on Security calls it, iPhone robbers trying to iFish victims. And what's happening is he got this message from somebody in Brazil, I believe it was. And when they had their phone stolen, and then when they tried to do the Find My Phone thing, they were able to send it a message and try to, tell the person, hey, I want to get my phone back. I'll pay you for it. And because in a lot of countries outside of the U.S., and I think Brazil is one of them, if there's a phone stolen, the serial number on it is actually locked out and you cannot use it again as a cell phone. You have to use it as like a little tablet or something. So I'm assuming they have the same thing there because they were mentioning that they wouldn't be able to use it. Nobody would be able to use it as a cell phone. But the U.S. doesn't do that. Anyway, so what's interesting is what they did is they got a message through their a message back claiming to be the Find My Phone iPhone's thing and then to log into this website. And but it wasn't Apple.com. It was something.esy.es/iCloud. And it looks just like an iCloud login.
And then we get their password. And
yeah, so they're phishing to get their password. And
clever.
So, yeah, so be very careful. If your phone's stolen, definitely pay attention to where the website goes. Don't just click on any random links.
Yeah, people, don't click on any links in your email, ever.
You can always ask for help if you're unsure about something. That's the biggest thing. There are people willing to spend a minute to say, yeah, that looks okay.
Yep.
Right.
And don't argue with those people.
Yes, please.
Because that happens a lot. Microsoft called me. That's like always how the conversation started at my store. And I'm like, no, they didn't. Yeah. Oh, no, they did. But they wanted $500 and I wouldn't give it to them. and I let them in my computer and they locked me out and put a password on it. It wasn't Microsoft. Oh, I can't believe Microsoft would do this. No, because it wasn't Microsoft. Like they get very defensive. They were doubling down on it.
Right. I had somebody come to me the same problem. And the password they're putting on there, what they're locking the registry.
Yep. They use a syskey.
Yeah. Which is actually really old technology that still works on Windows 10.
Yep. Yeah.
But
yeah, if you watch them type in syskey, unplug the computer quick.
Anyway, so my next one is 1 in 4 U.S. customers' healthcare data breached. Bom, bom, bom. Now, I actually have a problem with this article. It's securitymagazine.com, and it looks legit. They're putting numbers all throughout it, saying like, you know, the 2,000 customers were in a survey, and they found that that most likely hospitals were, you know, where their data was breached because 1/3 had just seen had been to a urgent care, and another, you know, 22% was at a physician's office, and like just after their stuff was stolen. And I don't believe all that. I mean, because how often do everybody go to doctors and hospitals and stuff? And just because you went to a doctor doesn't mean your stuff. I mean, it's more likely you went to Target and had your credit card stolen there than if going to your family physician.
Through Target's HVAC system.
Exactly. It's to rely on the average person to try to identify where their stuff was stolen at is I do not believe that.
Yeah,
that's... I would not rely on that. Now, if they had their doctor come to them and say, "Hey, your stuff was stolen. You know, we're doing what is it called when they come to you and tell you
the
disclosure?
Disclosure, responsible disclosure on this stuff. It's I would understand that. But just to say, my stuff was stolen, and last week I was at the pharmacy. It's like, really?
Companies don't disclose.
The moon and the stars aligned, and now my password's missing. Help.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
it's it's hard to say where you got pwned from. That's really, really hard.
Right.
Because it happens so often. It's not like there's a single source of this stuff.
Exactly.
Very unfortunate.
Yeah.
And then I found an article which I was interested in because I was thinking about doing this with my Linux PC. And it's how to set up network bonding with your Linux PC. What network bonding is where you can take multiple links on your – or multiple NICs on your computer or a server. Generally, this is done with servers manage switches, and you can take all three or four of those or two, three, four, multiple NICs and have all the data running across those. You can either do load balancing or, have it all act as a one big network card or, you know, so I thought this was an interesting article, and it goes through and explains what the difference between them all are. I don't know what happened. It clicked away. I will put that in the load.
And it's supported on FreeNAS too.
Yeah.
So if you have built your array of 96 terabytes of SSDs and you go, man, that choking point is this slow Ethernet, you can bond them together to make your data faster.
You say, even though I'm running across a gigabit. Well, now you can have 4 gigabits of
You can have 4 gigabits because that's still the – well, and it works. We've talked about upgrading that in our office because our problem isn't any one computer because they're all connected gigabit. It's the multitude of computers that are connected to our FreeNAS because that's how – that's our file repository for backing up all the customer computers.
Right.
And how we image things.
It always makes me laugh when I see a bonded interface inside of the terminal. It's the very first one will be called Bond Zero. So it's the Bondo.
Yeah. The Bondo. That's I want funny. 7 of them. Right. Bond 007.
So that's actually what I was trying to do with my FreeNAS, and it keeps on crashing on that.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, I was looking at it. I replaced the switch, put a different switch in for other reasons, and I thought, well, maybe.
Do you have
that switch is acting funny?
Yeah. Do you have Intel network cards?
Yeah, that's what it is. So maybe I'm going to try something else.
When you're doing that, there's like if you go in the forums for FreeNAS, they specifically tell you which cards to order that it works well with.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's where some of the larger hardware vendors have an advantage because they're controlling the entire market. You know, when they build these, they spec'd it out. They wrote the software and they spec the hardware. So. But that is a trouble with the FreeNAS sometimes is going, oh, it didn't work in my configuration. That's because they support so many different network cards. That's actually something interesting. It's in the notes for pfSense. When they updated the version, one of the things they added was other network cards that support Alt-Q function, which is for traffic shaping. Because they implicitly – it's not done – in software, it's done in coordination with the hardware directly to do traffic shaping and the way the packets have to be managed. So they have to implicitly list the network to do it. Like the network card has to support the function. If not, the traffic shaping function will tell you that the card does not have Alt-Q support, which is the problem with the mini firewall, the SG-1000 firewall, which I tweeted Steve Gibson twice now, and he has not added it to his show notes going – he said, you can get these and it supports traffic shaping with these little $150 firewalls, and I told him he was incorrect. So I don't know. Hopefully he makes a note in his next show because I've sent him a message.
Third time's the charm.
Third time's the charm.
Unfortunately.
I tagged him in the tweet. So I don't know if he looks at – he gets tagged in a lot of tweets. So I also DM'd him last time after I heard he didn't –
maybe DM him.
That's what I did. Sent him my review and said, you don't have to watch my whole review. I'll save you to the end. It does not support the thing you said it supported.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that they chose a card. I don't know why they did this. Whoever spec'd the hardware for these, which is Netgate, built these little cool boxes and they sell them, but they don't support traffic shaping. I mean, they're still a full-blown pfSense box. They still work. But a lot of people might buy it thinking that. And it's not – it says it in their detailed notes on there when you buy it. But it's if you're just assuming it's a like any of their pfSense boxes, you're going to get it and go, wait a minute. It's grayed out. It says it doesn't support this network card.
Have you ever heard of Parallel SSH or PSSH? I just found a NextGraph article about it.
At a previous job that didn't have configuration management set up – We used PSSH specifically. What I had to manage was about 60 servers with it, so I could PSSH bash scripts onto all these boxes, run my management tasks, update FS tabs, remount partitions, migrate data. PSSH was really nice, but there are far better tools if you can spend the time to learn configuration management. Yeah. It pays off so much.
That could be a good Fresh Looks show we do just on all the different options out there and why you should use a config manager for deployments.
Yeah. There's a Python script I've been using that's similar to that. Because I have at Eastern Michigan University, I have a project I've been working on. And it's where I have to send out this script to 600 nodes, 600 servers. And I haven't gone through the steps to set up a configuration manager or Ansible or something. So it's basically I send out the script and then let it run on those machines and it reports back to me. But it's similar. It's a parallel XARG. It's the script's called VXARG.
Okay.
Where it'll run it, and then you can tell it how many to run at one time. So I have it run 15 at a time, and it goes through this whole list of hosts I give it.
It's so cool when it's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm watching it come through and then have it reporting, have all those starting to report back. I'm like, sweet.
So at that point, when you have that large of a fleet, do you not really care about the ones that have failed?
Not really. I mean, I care about the ones that say it went well, but then isn't reporting back. That's what I care about. So, because I'll have a list of the 600 or 700 nodes. And there's actually, my SSH key actually only works on 150 of them. And then from that, only about 110 of them are actually reporting back. So now I have to go in and investigate those 40 that aren't reporting. And that's what I need to get working, and maybe making an easier setup for that. It's all through SSH keys and SCP, things like that, that I'm using with it.
Very cool. That sounds like a fun research project.
It is. Have you heard of Planet Lab?
I have not.
It's really in the educational realm, where it's planet-lab.net, I think. And we have nodes across. Technically, it's 1,200 nodes across the world that we can develop apps and run it against those and get data back. But the downfall is that they're all individual nodes are all run by the universities, and not all of them are actually kept up or managed right. So, like I said, maybe about 10% actually work right. So yeah, it's very interesting. And then to be able to get access to it, you have to put a node on the system. And then as far as I know, it's only universities that can have nodes on the system. And it's actually really old. It's basically scripted out Docker images, but like 10 years before Docker was popular.
Okay. So it's using, cool.
It's using Fedora 8 as their main OS. I was
trying to say it's super hackable, right? Like they haven't loaded a patch in a while.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty much it. And it's kind of like you can burn it down and recreate it easily. That's what it's supposed to be. It's a cool system that we're using. I like it.
The technology they use is called LXC for Linux containers.
Oh, okay.
There's an announcement that they have about it. And if you happen to use LXC, you should check out a project called LXD for Linux Container Daemon. It provides a more user-friendly interface to Linux containers. Oh. Whole different topic. Sorry.
Yeah. And that that announcement that you're talking about was posted in 2012. Yeah, we're 5 years ago. Not a whole lot has been updated since then. It runs, but it's
the
just
world has though
slow. Right?
Maybe they haven't updated. The world has definitely moved forward.
Yeah,
we have vending machines attacking things today. Toasters that go wild and rogue at universities. Yeah. You've seen that article, right, about the 10,000 botnet inside of a university. They got attacked by their own servers. It was so funny how they reverse engineered it. I want someone to do a better white paper on it because they wouldn't even release the university's name. But basically, they had a massive amount of traffic, slowed down the network, and the late night engineer. And I think now they've done a little bit more disclosure on this. They think it was as a student project. And the reason they think that is because all the DNS queries that shut everything down were looking up some local seafood place to the there. So they have a feeling they programmed 10,000 IoT devices. What they had done was each bot would go and look for weak passwords and correct the password on the next IoT device, and it spread like wildfire. Now, the sysadmin team at the university were able to figure this out. Because they turns out they were spreading without an encryption key. So they were able to analyze the traffic and figure out the passwords that they were setting all the IoT devices and then use the botnet and hijack the botnet to take over and unprogram all the devices because they passed everything in clear text across the university's network.
That's really clever.
It was really a clever way because they used the power of the botnet to unbotnet it. Yeah. and tell it to quit sucking up all the DNS bandwidth. and creating noise and traffic. But yeah, all the IoT devices turned on themselves. And they think it might have been a student who just spread it internally on the network. But of course, anyone can get on the network because it was on a public side, but it created so much bandwidth traffic that it shut down all the university when it was done.
Yeah, that's crazy.
When light bulbs attack. and a lot of it was their vending machines.
Was it?
Yeah.
Vending machines? Man.
Yeah.
They should have programmed it to start dispensing Snicker bars or something.
Yeah, I know. Why can't they do something cool? Why was it looking up DNS queries in a seafood restaurant?
I welcome this form of attack.
Yes. Yeah. I want all the vending machines just to drop Snicker bars.
All right.
Do we have a music? Did you pick one out?
Music. I
did you know this thing ahead of time?
We want a random music song?
Well, it's going to be. Because none of us know it, so therefore it's random.
Well, we can't have happy – or can we have happy birthday now?
No. It is out of copyright now.
Oh, no. No, we're not going to do that.
No. I won't torture anyone. I mean, it's out of copyright, but it's still not a good song. I've heard it many times. I've heard it 41 to be exact.
Sung to you, right?
Sung to me.
Well, how about we'll make it a random song that will come and surprise everybody.
It'll be a surprise me and Phil.
Or no, how about we'll do another, what's it called?
Susie?
No.
The Susie ones are so good.
And
they have videos to go with it. That's
so much good production goes into their stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, it'll be a Brad Sox song. How about that?
Sure.
And my favorite is Fixing My Brain.
I think you said
right. So, you have been...
Oh,
oops.
you have been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 228.
The Happy Birthday SHA collision.
With Tony.
Yes.
and this is Tony Bemis.
Tom Lawrence.
Phil Parada.
And I've got to shut off the other music before I can do our exit. No, that's the wrong button. I'm using an ancient version of Android on this now. I've got to figure out how to get to all my open. Oh, it's it. It's a top down. There we go.
Now we can do an outro.
Yeah, now I can do soundboard outros.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can...
Bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.